Next case is Henry Mercier, I assume, versus the Department of Veterans Affairs, 2013-7042. Ms. Phillips.
May it please the Court. As a disabled veteran myself, I'm proud to represent Mr. Mercier before this Court. On Mr. Mercier's reopened claim in 2001, the VA granted service connection for his right wrist disability, and they rated him at 50%. So there is no question that this right wrist disability was service connected.
But there's a fact question, right?
That is just some procedural history, Your Honor. This appeal concerns whether he's entitled
whether he had an injury when he entered the service and whether there was aggravation. These are all fact questions. So why do we have jurisdiction?
Your Honor, the VA concedes jurisdiction, that this is a question of law.
One can't concede jurisdiction.
I understand, Your Honor. The Court has jurisdiction because Section 7292 provides for review for rule of law or any statute or regulation or any interpretation thereof. Whether the Veterans Court applied the correct legal standard to the RO's requirement to document its decision is a question of law. So is the standard of clear and unmistakable error and how that was applied in this case.
But the legal requirement to document the basis for its decision, that you're relying on is the legal requirement that they explain that it was the natural progression of the disease, right?
That is part of the issue, Your Honor. The first issue is whether the VA can immunize its pre-1990 decisions from any review because before 1990, the RO was not required to give its reasons and bases in its decisions. And so what the VA tries to do is, using the law as it was in 1966, tries to wipe its hands of any pre-1990 decision that because the RO was not required to give its reasons and bases.
I'm not exactly sure I read their brief that way, but what I think the issue is that one need only describe whether or not something was the natural progression of a disease if there's an underlying determination that there was an aggravation in the first instance.
Right, and there absolutely was aggravation here, and that is clear and unmistakable error in the VA's
question, whether or not there was evidence of an aggravation, that takes us back to Judge Lori's concern that that's a factual question, right?
Right, and Your Honor, I need to describe some of the facts to explain the error of law. The error of law is two errors of law. The first is that the VA, as I said, wipes its hands of any pre-1990 decision because the RO is not required to give its reasons and bases. However, the RO has to give something in its decision for us to evaluate under the clear and unmistakable error standard whether a reasonable fact finder could only conclude that there was no aggravation here. And under that standard, I don't know how we can assess whether a reasonable fact finder could only conclude that there was no aggravation if we have nothing about the reason. Moreover, it would be an absurd result. It would be an absurd result if nothing before 1990 were available for review under the clear and unmistakable error statute. The clear and unmistakable error statute, 38 U.S.C. section 7111, says that a decision by the board is subject to revision on the grounds of clear and unmistakable error. The VA's interpretation of the RO's requirements to document its decision gives that statute no effect. It writes that statute off the books, and we cannot do that, Your Honor. As far as the clear and unmistakable error, the aggravation question, the standard here is in 1966, and the VA and I and Mr. Mercier agree on this point, that the standard in 1966 is that the pre-existing injury or disease will be considered to have been aggravated by active military service where there is an increase in disability during such service, unless there is a specific finding that the increase in disability is due to the natural progress of the disease. The VA must rebut this presumption of aggravation by showing clear and unmistakable evidence, and it must make a specific finding that the disease's natural progress caused the increase. The issue here is that no, under the clear and unmistakable error standard, which the Veterans Court just tries to write off the books, that there's no question this injury was aggravated in service. Mr. Mercier worked as a typist for 5 years on the old manual typewriting machines. He developed, after 5 years, he was promoted along. He was progressing well in his job in the military, in the Navy. He was working on carrier duty. He was in fleet operations. He was beating the keys on this old typewriter for 5 years. Then he gets hurt. He gets hurt and he develops pain so severe that the Navy recommends a bone graft surgery, which fails, and then he was discharged for his right wrist disability. The military found that he was disabled in the line of duty under a less veteran-friendly standard, I might add. So how, you know, he was doing a professional job until he got hurt, and then he goes down the tubes after surgery, and then he is discharged. How is there not aggravation here? The VA points to Davis in its brief. And says that, you know, this is a temporary flare-up under Davis. First, there are several reasons why Davis doesn't apply, which we address in the brief. One of the key ones is that even under Davis, Mr. Mercier meets the standard. He lost his job as a typist in the Navy because of his wrist disability. Under Davis, this was not a temporary flare-up. You don't lose your job over temporary flare-ups. You lose your job when you are disabled, and his discharge records say he's discharged for a physical disability. Because of this, the rating decision is clearly a product of clear and unmistakable error. The Veterans Court tries to wipe its hands of this and say, No. They don't have to give reasons and basis.
That's the third time you've used that expression.
I apologize.
You feel strongly about it.
I apologize, Judge. I'll use some other expression next. So the RO decision, yes, it says something, but it tells us nothing. Under Natale versus Principi in 2004, this court held that the RO is not required to phrase its findings in the language of the regulation, but it must document something about its findings. And the RO made many statements about Natale's condition. They identified the causes, they made the specific finding that the increased vision loss was due to the natural progress of the disease. It did not use the exact language of the regulation, but it was clear from that RO's decision that the RO understood and considered the applicable regulations, the applicable standards. Here, there's nothing like the RO in Natale. Here, the RO makes a conclusory statement with nothing in the record to support it, that there was no in-service increase in the injury. I'll add that Natale relied on Pierce versus Principi, where this court held that in the absence of evidence to the contrary, the rating board is presumed to have made the requisite findings. Well, here, unlike Pierce, there is plenty of evidence to the contrary. He was discharged for disability. So in Pierce, the Veterans Court tried again with this argument that the RO was not required to give the reasons and bases for its decision. It then applied the presumption of regularity to the 1945 decision in Pierce, and it said that the requisite finding is implicit and not inconsistent with the evidence then of record. Here, this rating decision is just wrong. It is just wrong. And under Pierce's standard, there is plenty of evidence in the record to contradict this rating decision. How can a veteran serve for 5 years as a typist on the old manual typewriter with no issues? Re-enlist. He re-enlisted. He had two enlistment examinations, one in 1958 and one in 1961. He re-enlisted. He got promotions, and then he got hurt. Have surgery.
But again, we're going back to factual decisions. I mean, what they found was that he had the pre-existing injury, that any surgeries he had during service were to help him with that pre-existing injury, and that the later injury was to a different bone that wasn't in the wrist.
Your Honor, if they're saying that he has a pre-existing fracture in 1958, and that he had the court found that he had this fracture all throughout. There's a basketball injury in 1961. He's also hitting the manual typing machine.
No, but they made a factual determination that that didn't cause an aggravation, and that in fact he had surgery for purposes of trying to remediate the original injury. I mean, I might not agree with that if I were the fact finder, but I'm not the fact finder.
Your Honor, yes, and we're not here to argue the facts. We're here to look at the clear and unmistakable error standard. I agree with you. We're not the fact finders. We're looking at the standard for clear and unmistakable error, and we're looking at the standard for rating decisions before 1990 and whether they can make these conclusory assertions with no evidence in the record to support it. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal, Your Honor.
We will do that. Ms. Phillips, Mr. Grimaldi. Did the VA wash its hands of anything we have jurisdiction to hear?
May it please the Court, Your Honor. To address jurisdiction first, we do believe that there is jurisdiction in this case because Mr. Meester is challenging a Q error in a legal standard, arguing that the Q error happened in failing to rebut the presumption of aggravation. However, we do believe that what is underlying it.
But the Q standard is not new. And application of Q is an application of law to fact.
Yes, Your Honor. And here, the argument that they are raising is that I would say that the error occurred completely in the legal sense, that there was a failure to rebut. Now, we believe what is actually
trying. That's evaluation of fact.
Yes, Your Honor. The factual predicate here in this case is what is not only driving this case, which compels it, but is actually what is dispositive here. So when we review jurisdiction, Your Honor, we did believe that the argument lay on the legal side. However, if this court disagrees and finds there's no jurisdiction, obviously we would not object.
So you would say they're alleging a legal violation. But when you actually look, whether or not there was a legal violation turns on whether or not the underlying factual predicate for that legal obligation existed.
Yes, Your Honor, exactly that.
Which A would give us jurisdiction as to the allegation, but we couldn't second guess the underlying factual predicate determination.
Correct, Your Honor. It would require an affirmation of the Veterans Court's decision. While Mr. Mercer doesn't directly challenge the finding that there was no increase in severity in his pre-existing right wrist injury, it is what is compelling his case. He disagrees with it, and as my colleague has stated today, disagreement with that, by citing facts that Mr. Mercer believes shows that there was an increase in severity, which would then require an attachment of the presumption of aggravation and then have a requirement for rebuttal. However, as the 1966 regional office stated, quote, there was no increase in severity in the basic pre-existing right wrist pathology, and that's at JA 74. The board affirmed this, finding no error, finding no cue, saying that this is essentially a challenge to a weighing of the evidence. And
well, I mean, I think the strongest point that your friend on the other side could make is that he comes in with the wrist injury. He works for 5 years with the wrist injury, and then he's discharged for disability. So if he didn't have a disability that would stop him from participating in service and actively participating in service when he came in, but he's discharged for disability. How can that not be an aggravation?
Well, first to start off, Your Honor, this court, since it's not a fact finder here, doesn't have jurisdiction to go in, reweigh this evidence, and determine whether or not, in its opinion, Mr. Mercer suffered an aggravation, suffered an increase in severity during his time at the Navy. That aside, both the board and the Veterans Court looked at this evidence, since they do look at facts, and found that there was no cue. The board said that it was essentially an issue of weighing of evidence, that there was some evidence against increase in severity and some evidence for an increase in severity. And the Veterans Court found, quote, a reasonable fact finder could have found that there was no increase in the severity of the condition. And this is at JA 12. And to go into the weeds here and to go into the facts just to ease the court's mind, what to look at when we're looking at whether there's an increase in severity is whether there's an increase in the actual disability. Mr. Mercer had a fractured wrist when he entered the service. He left the service with a fractured wrist. There is not a reasonable fact finder could find that, based upon the different evidence in the record, that the pathology of that injury did not change during that time. Now, he might have experienced symptoms while in the Navy that made it difficult for him to work. There was no increase in the actual pathology, no increase in the fracture itself, just pain. And there is, in the record at JA64, evidence that he suffered pain ever since his injury back in 1957 while playing football before he was in the Navy. Now, my colleague says the regional office decision says something but tells us nothing. And the point that I've been making here today so far is that, respectfully, it tells us the one fact, the one factual predicate that is dispositive of this case, that there was no increase in severity during his service. And that finding precludes the attachment of the presumption of aggravation, because to have a presumption of aggravation, there must be an increase in disability. A pre-existing injury or disease will be considered to have been aggravated by active military, naval, or air service where there is an increase in disability during such service, and that is 38 U.S.C. 1153. Without the attachment of the presumption of aggravation, there can be no requirement to have any rebuttal with a specific finding, and since there's no requirement to rebuttal, there can be no cue because of a failure to rebut. Just one note on the Davis case, which you talked with my colleague. This is getting into the facts, and we do believe that the facts here are set, and the factual predicate is there's been no increase in severity. Davis does apply to this case. The Tortie case, which predates Davis from 1957 or so, held the same thing. Held that in order to have an increase in severity, there must be an actual increase in the pathology of the disability, as opposed to just continuance and flare-ups of the actual injury itself. So if there are no further questions, we respectfully request that the court affirm the decision of the Veterans Court.
Thank you, Mr. Grimaldi. Ms. Phillips has 3 minutes and 40 seconds left.
Thank you, Your Honor. To address a few points that my friend made for the VA, the incorrect legal standard here resulted in harmful error, and that's how we get into the facts. Because it resulted in harmful error, we are asking that this court reverse and order the Secretary to revise the 1966 rating decision.
Do you agree, though, that there's no obligation to provide the statement of reasons as it relates to the natural progression of the disease if there was no aggravation?
Your Honor, I agree that that correctly states the law, but that is not the situation here.
Okay, well, let me just refer you to JA-74. It says, the evidence clearly and unmistakably establishes that the non-united fracture of right wrist existed prior to service. There was no intercurrent disease or injury of right wrist in service. There was no increase in severity in the basic pre-existing wrist pathology. How do you, and it says there, surgical treatment in service was for remedial purposes and not per se considered service connection on the basis of aggravation. So they find, they expressly find no aggravation.
And this is where the clear and unmistakable error occurs in this rating decision. If you look at the record on page 59, the medical doctor who evaluated him said, he had a wrist fracture back in, before service, but he had no pain for a couple of years. And then he developed pain on wrist motion or prolonged finger motion. The record at page 61 also says, and this is the clinical record on 61, also says, he had no difficulty for several years. Then he developed pain on wrist motion or prolonged finger motion, as in typing. The record, again, at page 62 says the same thing. The record is replete with examples of how his injury was aggravated, and the RO committed, the RO rating decision reflects clear and unmistakable error, which is a legal question that this court has jurisdiction to decide. The evidence shows that the RO's decision on its face is wrong, that it is a legal standard that it fails to meet, that there is clear and unmistakable error. No reasonable fact finder could find no aggravation after, as Your Honor mentioned, he works as a typist for 5 years and has no issues, and then over the course of 2 years develops pain so severe. This is not a temporary flare-up. I'll note that Davis was talking about a psychiatric condition, schizophrenia, which is very different in a wrist fracture. There is no wrist flare-up of a wrist fracture. The issue was that his injury got worse and was aggravated by service. And because of this, we respectfully request this court to reverse the Veterans Court and order the Secretary to revise the 1966 rating decision.
Thank you. Ms. Phillips will take the case under advisement.
All right.